Yes, our special guest tonight, Jerome Corsi, for the first couple hours. So we have 1 hour to go. We'll take your phone calls with Jerry, and we will be right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here's the catch-22. What do we do, Jerry? On one hand, nobody wants war in the Middle East, but you have the leadership of Iran spouting this horrible rhetoric. What do we do?
Well, I think, George, there could yet be time for peaceful change from within Iran. I think as this situation gets more and more incendiary every day, the people of Iran don't want the war to go forward any more than the people of Israel want the war to go forward. If there were any indication from the White House or diplomatic channels that we would support the Green Revolution starting up again, any indication that people on the streets would be welcome or championed on the international scene, I think there are many within Israel who would like to see, and within Iran, who would like to see a peaceful change of their own government. That's the best solution. And we have to keep angling to see if there's any way we can support that.
All right, let's go to some of the phone calls we've got here for you, Jerry. We go to Jim in Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies, to get us started. Go ahead, Jim.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Mr. Corsi, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you see any kind of, with the HSBC thing, do you see any kind of political ties in any of this? Our administration has proven itself particularly adept with electronic things, tweet and Twitter and internet and stuff. And we have TARP and stimulus funds that we can't account for. Is that a possibility that some of this stuff is moving around, has political ties?
I'm beginning to investigate that. I think there may have been an effort to divert some of the stimulus money into illegal activity through banks like HSBC. Certainly there's a lot of money that's yet unaccounted for. And also, it puts a new perspective on the deficits. If deficits are run and yet government officials and bankers have found a way to siphon off a certain percentage of it for themselves, that's certainly another reason why the deficits are not contained. As regards the drug war, I think, and its financing through the banks has been going on for decades, and it includes, Democratic and Republican administrations alike, and I'm sure there's been involvement in the CIA and continues to be. It's why whistleblowers like John Cruise are so important. The governments are not likely to investigate or bring to light or really stop money laundering, despite all the laws we pass. Because the final analysis, it takes bankers and government officials to be complicit in the criminal activity for it to occur. And whistleblowers who come forward like John Cruise with 1,000 pages of documentation are going to be hard to ignore once that gets into investigative agencies and Congress.
And it probably will, won't it?
Yes, it will. I mean, there's going to be an effort. I'm going to make an effort where John Cruise and I are going to be working this week to get the information into Homeland Security and ICE. Will also be working next week. We'll be working to hand over the information voluntarily to the Senate Permanent Investigating Committee. And again, I'm going to be making public this week in WND.com the efforts we're making to turn this information of HSBC money laundering activity, the 1,000 pages of account data, over to the authorities.
Okay, next up, let's go to west of the Rockies. Karen is in Sacramento, California. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning.
Hi, good to have you
with us. I wanted to know, Dr. Corsi, if the missiles that are being set up in Venezuela, are they Russian or are they Iranian? And do you know how they're progressing down there?
Well, Venezuela is working very strong on a military program and with missiles. It has both assistance from Iran and from Russia. There's also assistance from North Korea. North Korea continues to be a rogue force around the world to export nuclear technology. And the availability of the knowledge is out there. What the Iranians have done, and I think to the credit of the Iranian people, they're technically expert, as the Iranians have the ability, just given enough time, to master any nuclear weapons technology. And that's what makes it so frightening. Probably the Iranians, when they do develop nuclear weapons technology, will have some extremely successful weapons. And that's what makes the danger even heightened.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that call, Kieran. Jack is in Davison, Michigan. Hey, Jack, go ahead.
Hey, Yes, I keep being haunted by recurring revelations regarding Central Insurrection Agency involvement in the Mideast uprisings relative to death squads. Stan Monteith, Radio Liberty, very well documents, as does Alex Jones, hundreds of millions of dollars being pumped into the radical extremist groups like the Muslim Brotherhood, which was created by MI6, according to those folks, in 1928. Who benefits from all this, Jerome? It seems to be that the State Department, by the way, Paul Bremer, if you remember 3 years ago when all this hype about the new constitution there in Iraq, they created a Sharia constitution. So, and then we got Pat Tillman, who discovered that his platoon and others were assigned the task of at least guarding, if not recultivating, the opium, heroin, poppy fields in Afghanistan. And there's only 50 members of Al-Qaeda, which I correctly believe the CIA created. So we have all of these dictators over there being creations of a State Department, CIA, MI6, et cetera. And then they're engaged in all this drug smuggling activity, and then the funding of the death squads. And, Pakistan Intelligence, ISI, created by the CIA, and then transferring nuclear weapons technology through the State Department, whatever. I mean, Stan Monteith got it all documented, Radio Liberty. So, Jerry, well, you know, it seems to me the ones that are benefiting from this are the Bilderberg operatives, which would be the State Department, the CIA, the treasonous entities in the Pentagon, et cetera. Just like Judy Wood pointed out the other night, I heard the rebroadcast.
Yeah.
Astonishing. So here you got a super high-tech weapon being deployed against the American people, 1,100 bodies dematerialized, and we're supposed to believe these were Saudi Arabian terrorists. You see where I'm going with all this?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, let's begin to respond. The first of all, I've argued that the covert war between Israel and Iran has largely already started. The assassinations that have occurred of Iranian nuclear scientists, the explosions in Iranian military facilities, those have got Mossad and CIA intelligence fingerprints all over them.
Not coincidental by any means, because there are no coincidences.
Exactly. And I've argued for decades that all the covert activity, the CIA, I think Jack Kennedy was right, needed to be broken up into 1,000 pieces. And the covert operations, which if you can get any glimpse of them, anytime we've had any glimpses, the Church Committee or others that have investigated the CIA, it's always shocking the activities the CIA has been involved in. We don't need to have this kind of covert activity. And you do make a good point about how the globalist New World Order people seem to like this kind of chaos, because it leads to a structure of international control where they're in charge. I mean, I'm concerned about the same thing going on with the European Union right now, using the crisis in Greece and the potential breakup of the euro as another reason to get more international control over countries like Greece, which will be forced to surrender their sovereign authority over their budget to the EU in order to get the loans they need to continue to operate. So these crises do have covert elements to them, and they do have a larger picture in which internationalists want to grab power. And again, if we could get the CIA to operate more openly, which I think in a democratic or constitutional republic environment such as we have ought to be the case, I'd also like to see the Federal Reserve produce an audit. I think Ron Paul is right on this. I think we've got too much hidden in our government, and the government authorities are never going to tell the American people the truth.
Let's go to Josie in Richmond, Virginia, on the wild card line. Josie, go ahead. You're on with Jerry Corsi.
Okay, just picking up on that last line, they also have never come out with the truth that the attack on the USS Liberty by Israel was indeed a deliberate and not an accidental attack. When 34 were killed, which is twice as many as the coal that they keep talking about. and I am not a lover of Muslims or Jews, but I don't hate Muslims or Jews, but I'm not a Zionist in this case. I heard from Charlie Rose show tonight, had the ambassador from Russia to the United States, and you could tell by how he was talking that he was miffed. He was saying, you know, is they feeling like we kind of are deprecating their points of view and so forth. And one of the things that he said was that that when all this business came up with the UN and that the Russians did not and the Chinese did not vote along with everybody else on the, I guess it was the censures of Syria. The point is that they had certain amendments they wanted to bring up. They wanted to smooth things out more diplomatically than what's been going on, and they were kind of rebuffed, and that's what he feels that Russia has in the past also been rebuffed on other points.
Well, yeah, but the bottom line on that, Josie, is Bashar is killing his own citizens.
Oh, yes.
Innocent people, little
babies.
Heavy
artillery.
I mean, I've seen pictures of it. It's horrible.
Yes, it is. But they're also saying that this is not a time when we can get in there and do stuff. We just can't go into every single country. So maybe we can do it through Turkey or maybe through another country. Or maybe we not doing it, but the other country, getting other countries involved. Certainly the Arab League is certainly horrified.
They won't stop.
I think there's a moral obligation from the United States and from the UN to stand up and object to these incidents of genocide wherever they occur. And Syria is a clear example of where it's occurring, that we need to militarily intervene. I've not gone there. I've not advocated that. But I think that there's pressures that can be put on these situations short of military intervention that can make a dramatic difference.
See, I'm a proponent, Jerry, in taking out governments that go in and oppress their own people,
right,
kill, murder, and maim. Those people need to be taken out.
And there's many of them around the world. It's not just in the Middle East.
No,
there's
of course
many.
Not. It's all over.
And also on the issue of false flags, I mean, even going back to the Tonkin Bay incident, which we now know again was a set up false flag
in
operation
Vietnam.
To get us into Vietnam. Again, I think you deal with government secrecy here, and this is the problem, is the government's, I would not be in business. I would not be an investigative journalist if governments were honest.
Now, let me ask you the question that's on my mind, Jerry. How do we know that the rhetoric that we think it's coming from the Ayatollah or from Ahmadinejad is accurate? How do we know that's not being made up in order to promote this hatred toward Iran? Is that possible? Is that even conceivable?
Well, it's been examined, and I've read many reports on it. There are several very good websites. Memory is one that reports accurately out of the Middle East that show the speeches in their original context, give the full speeches. The Iranian government is set with this anti-Jewish hatred and hatred of Israel that is like an obsession.
Yeah.
And so in this instance, I think having examined it fully.
So these are accurate.
These are accurate.
Okay.
And unfortunately, they will not be toned down.
Isn't it horrible, though, that you even have to question whether it's accurate or not?
Well, I think we've such experience with government, certainly in my lifetime. I mean, no matter, it doesn't make any difference to me whether it's, George W. Bush or Barack Obama. If the president says something, I want independent verification.
Yeah.
Because you can't rely on what the White House or the government is saying.
In the early days, though, they never would question.
Well, and again, it's our mainstream media, which just parrots, especially, when they like the administration, they hated George W. Bush, the mainstream media, they love Barack Obama. So the critical mainstream media has gone to sleep. And they tend to vilify anyone who dares to question what Barack Obama does. I think you need to question Barack Obama just like you needed to question George W. Bush, and I did both. And we'll continue to do so regardless of who's the president.
You do it to everybody. I would not want to get on your wrong side if I were a politician.
It's, the George W. Bush on the North American Union and on the Security and Prosperity Partnership in North America. I think
the investigative work we, I, and others did there largely shut down things like the Trans-Texas Corridor that was going to be built and brought to light various internationalist agendas that, that can be stopped when they're brought to light. The Davos crowd, the George Soros internationalist crowd, and it's also the Henry Kissinger crowd, hate the light of day. And that's what's got to be done with investigative journalism and people who are referring to, you know, the work that has been done. And, George, your show has been great in bringing the truth to the American people, which it demands critical thinking.
Well, see, we need people like you, though, Jerry. What I can do with this program is to get the nation to wake up and hear it. But I need people like you out there who are doing the unraveling to get it done, because we don't have those resources. I mean, I got my couple producers and my engineer, right, and then there's little old me and my weekend staff. That's it.
Well, but you do a great job, George. I admire it and have admired it for years, and I'm honored to be associated with you. And the basic fundamental, you know, business I go about is trying to find the truth. So you get an HSBC investigation, and I get 1,000 pages from a whistleblower, John Cruz, that details fraudulent accounts. I spent 25 years in financial services. I've gone through the federal government's training on money laundering. This is the first time I've really seen how a money laundered account works. It's shocking.
It is bizarre, isn't it?
It is. And when I bring this information forth and show it to people, publish it in WND, get it before Congress and the authorities, it's clear that this kind of activity does not go on except with the complicity within the bank.
What are the drug deal? Is this primarily drug dealer money?
I think it's a combination. I think once a bank gets this kind of a criminal internal culture, and I think, you know, the HSBC certainly is showing evidence of this going back 10 years with their investigations on money laundering. It involves additionally terrorism money, and it involves money siphoned off from government. Involves money stolen out of the banking system by fraudulent loans to these companies.
That goes into these black op programs and things like that.
Precisely. Jeez. Any black hole they want to put it into. Money from the government, possibly to, you know, again, support black op operations that they don't want to know how it's financed, or just people who say, well, look, we got $787 billion here in a stimulus program. Nobody will miss 10% of it.
But you know what, Jerry? Every major bank has got to know what's going on.
They do, and this is why it's so important to get this information on HSBC to the public, because show people how it's done, including identity theft, which may involve the identities of people listening that are being used by criminals to money launder within banks without their knowledge. This is so pervasive. You know, criminal activity, like the drug business, is not going to exist unless you can get the $2 trillion of revenue into the banking system.
Well, and you know what I've always said when we talked about that possibility of me running years ago,
yes,
legalize it.
Well,
legalize the drugs and let the money flow.
When you get to study this, when you see it, it's imperative that we legalize drugs. Not that I'm in favor of drugs, but the criminal activity needs to be channeled into pharmaceutical companies.
And we are not going to beat it conventionally. And so you legalize it, you go to a use tax, and all the money they use, you make money on it. Simple as that. Nobody wants to legalize drugs per se, but I mean, that's the only way we can get around it. We'll be back with more with Jerry Corsi and Final Calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Dr. Kirby Surprise joins us as we talk about synchronicity, the art of coincidence, choice, and unlocking your mind. I'm looking forward to that. When we come back in a moment with Dr. Jerome Corsi, we'll take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Jerome Corsi. And, of course, we are going to take your phone calls this hour as well. You know, you and I predicted back in October of 2010 that something would happen to Iran. We've missed it by a bit. What do you think now, Jerry?
Well, I think, George, going back even to when I wrote Atomic Iran, 2005, you and I have both seen happen what's unfolding today. It's kind of like a little bit of future vision. We saw it earlier than it happened. It seemed 2005 like it was going to happen right away, and it's taken time. But it is happening nonetheless, very much as we predicted. You've got a showdown occurring between Iran, which is determining to build nuclear weapons, and Israel, which feels, I think, correctly, that a nuclear-armed Iran will be an existential threat to the Jewish state. And the way the world is moving, the only solution that's being contemplated seriously is now a military solution. And that, I think, is so limited and such a wrong direction. It's going to be destructive. It's not going to be a video game if there is a shooting war between Iran and Israel. It could be a regional war very quickly. It could be a nuclear war. There could be thousands of people on both sides that die. This is something everyone should pray does not happen.
This is a formidable opponent, no doubt,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes. Iran should not be underestimated. They are quite... Iranian people are very technically expert. They're highly intelligent. They say the Persian culture, which I think the Iranians would get rid of this radical regime if they had any support internationally to do it at all. And that's where I think the solution is, that we've got to start actively promoting the idea of freedom in Iran and supporting the people in Iran who want freedom, want to change their own government from within. But the Iranian people, if there is a war, I look at Israel when I'm in Israel and say, you know, I've told government officials sitting in their office, look out here and imagine that half of this is destroyed by missile attacks during a war.
I know an Iranian fellow out this way who has set up a couple interviews with Iranian broadcasters for us to add that expertise to our program, Jerry. And
right.
he told me tonight that his brother called from Iran, I'm not going to mention his name, for their own safety, but that they're
right.
desperately trying to get their money out of Iran because they sense something coming.
Well, and it seems to be imminent. I mean, Ehud Barak, the Minister of Defense in Israel, has said that, you know, there's this window that military action has to be taken, because if it's not taken soon, Israel will not be able to destroy the nuclear weapon sites that Iran is putting together. Now, that's a very frightening comment, because that comment means that the Israeli government is seriously contemplating a preemptive strike with or without the approval of the United States or the international community. And it needs to be taken seriously, that that's a possibility within the next 90 days.
With the rhetoric that we hear out of Iran, can you blame them?
No, because this is, again, the problem. If Iran wanted to be a part of the international community, wanted the world's approval on nuclear energy, Iran needs to tone down the rhetoric against the state of Israel, against Jews. The idea of saying we need to wipe Jews out or kill Jews and eliminate Israel, these buttons, once you push, are very deep buttons in the Jewish historical consciousness.
And once you push them, I don't think you can go back.
You can't.
That's the problem. I mean, even if tomorrow they started saying, oh, we didn't mean it,
well,
how do you forget that?
The Jewish people have learned over, you know, centuries that once governments start talking about killing Jews, it needs to be taken seriously. There were millions of Jews who thought that they could deal with Hitler in the 1930s, only to end up in the concentration camps.
And he, if I remember my history, in the beginning, even though he spouted his rhetoric, he wasn't that obvious, was he?
Well, the door was open for a long time for the Jews to leave Germany. And I think it was actually Great Britain who did some of the shutting of the door, not wanting as much immigration, emigration from Germany into Palestine at the time. But, you know, the point I'm making, trying to get across, is that Ahmadinejad and Ayatollah Khomeini, if they would tone down the rhetoric and say, you know, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, have accepted Israel. There's no reason why Israel can't exist in the Middle East. It's a small country. And the idea that peaceful development can occur over a long period of time is one that nations need to take a serious look at and put aside these irrational hatreds that do not lead to productive international relationships. And again, the idea of a war coming here is one that I think we should, to the last minute, work to prevent. And if we would just support the people in Iran, the Iranian community in California has extensive ties into Iran. With even a little attention from the U.S. State Department, those networks could be activated and we could communicate with the people in Iran who want to prevent a war and want to change their own nation peacefully from within. Our State Department's got to engage. I beg the Bush administration to engage with the people of Iran who could change their own country, and I'm begging the Obama administration to do the same.
I just think the next month is going to be very, very interesting, Jerry.
I think the likelihood of military action, unfortunately, is ramping up by the hour.
Yeah, maybe even sooner than 4 weeks. Let's go to Jacob in San Jose, California. Get us started. Hey, Jacob, thanks for calling.
Yes, Mr. Norrie, not to get too ramped up, it'd be nice if you could get maybe an hour with Ahmadinejad and an hour with the top imam over there.
We have talked about that, believe it or not. I'm not sure they would come on the program, but I sure have brought that up.
Mr. Corsi, before Bernard Madoff's scheme got stopped, it's been reported that about $20 billion was transferred over to an Israeli bank. Do you know anything about this and what bank it is in Israel that has that Bernard Madoff $20 billion?
Well, I have not tracked that. I have not followed the Madoff scandal in that type of detail. I'm sure that the feds could find it and they would go after it. The same with this MF Global, which appears to be another massive scandal.
Salenti got burned on that one.
Who did?
Jerry Salenti got burned on that.
Oh, yes, very much so. And, you know, this is the MF Global, I think, is a potentially as big a scandal because it looks like client money was intermingled and used by the firm in a way that was completely inappropriate. At any rate, I also want to make one more point about these scandals. Despite passing, you know, Dodd-Frank and all these laws, I said, you know, for decades that unfortunately the criminals in Wall Street are not stopped by new legislation.
No, not at all.
And the regulators often tend to be, when you finally uncover it, complicit with the criminals.
So how come Bernie Madoff just doesn't tell everybody where he sent the money?
Well,
he's already in jail.
He probably spent a lot of it. He may not care anymore. I mean, as I listened to Madoff statements from jail, I think he may have in part lost his mind at some point along the line and just detached from reality. But certainly, I mean, the idea, all Madoff had to do was invest that money. It's a great tragedy of what we're talking about with money laundering and HSBC. If we made drugs into a legitimate business, we could eliminate 90% of this criminality that goes on around the world with the drug trade.
Yeah.
And the drug trade is huge and it's pervasive and it's a menace to, you know, to free government into our lives and the banking system. And government is complicit in it.
And there's a perfect example at how the money was merely numbers on a piece of paper. And he put down anything, any number he wanted.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars wired into these accounts. And as I pointed out, you know, you've got PayPal, you've got American Express wiring money in and out of these accounts. Again, it needs to be investigated. These are suspicious transactions. But you'll have everybody in the financial scene participating. When there's $2 trillion to move around, the profits on it are so great that very few organizations can resist it. And they get involved in it. And when the evidence is produced from within, like the wire, you know, this whistleblower did, showed the internal manager, I'm saying now, has dozens of wired conversations taped with bank senior management and HSBC. HSBC listening tonight, better not try to bury this one because the evidence is here.
They could be on tape.
They could be on tape. And so, therefore, when we turn this evidence over to the authorities, I'm going to continue to press it to make sure the authorities don't bury it again or just charge the bank a fine. And, you know, if I'm singling out HSBC, it's because we have evidence of HSBC.
Right. You've got those numbers. You got those documents.
Got the documents. And that's what, but I'm confident that, you know, the number of banks involved in money laundering would, you know, shock the ordinary person. And it's, you know, the banks go with the money, and the money corrupts the same way it will within the government officials that handle it, where we need the Fed audited. We need the CIA to be openly audited. We need these activities to be exposed. Once they're exposed, the Fed's given $1 trillion to Europe, which hardly anyone knows about. And this is all debt money. The idea we can exist on this mountain of debt. You can throw a drunken party only for so long. The history of the world is that the mountain of debt we're living on, the federal government, and internationally in the EU, will not long sustain.
Good point. Let's go next to Reading, Pennsylvania. Joe's with us. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, terrific program, guys.
Hi, thank you.
George, I'm going to ask your guest, if he heard about a doomsday bomb that Israel would set, two questions. A doomsday bomb that Israel would set off if they do feel cornered by their enemies. And number two, could you speculate the probability that there would be war between Iran and Israel in the next year, within the next year?
Okay, I think you would say the probability there might be pretty high, Jerry.
I think it's getting towards 100%. There's no diplomatic solution emerging. The governments are not working with the Iranian people to try to moderate the regime. These sanctions are only going to push Iran to feel more in a corner. It's a very bad tactic to corner someone who's an adversary, but we're going to do that with the banking and the oil sanctions that are going to be imposed on Iran. The idea that Israel has a doomsday bomb, I've never believed it. I do think that the state of Israel, when it comes down to preservation, will fight with every resource available if that, in fact, a war starts. It's what scares me so much about a war between Israel and Iran, is that it's hard to see how it's going to stop. And Russia is probably not just going to sit on the sidelines and see Iran destroyed, nor will China, which have very strong ties historically, and especially Russia, but also with oil, to Iran and economic interests, where they're not going to want to see Iran put down. Again, a regime change or something where it also disturbs me with Egypt becoming so radicalized, because now the Gaza is going to be able to be resupplied easily through the Sinai, and the militarization of the Gaza, I think, will begin to ramp up very quickly.
Next up, let's go to Chicago. Charlie's with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Charlie. Thanks for holding.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, gentlemen. I just want to be brief. I got 2 points I want to make to both of you. Number one, this game is unwinnable. Wars have never truly been won, and I was telling your producer, George, I said, if we go to war, everybody's got brawn and everybody's got gladiators on their side, but nobody's really going to win. This is our planet. This is Earth. Where are we going to go? You light them up, now what?
I agree. War is the worst solution. Also, you don't know. Everybody goes to war thinking they're going to win.
Nobody wins. Right. We all lose.
Everybody loses.
If I may, just interject, I'm sorry.
Sure. No. Go ahead. Go ahead, Charlie.
And my other point, and I need the world and America and you two to hear me closely. From this perspective, this game isn't winnable in the fact that it's not our game board. We are throwing darts at a board in the dark. We keep pointing fingers at people and terrorists and ideas of terrorism. It's all a joke. It's an illusion. Because the people that are running the show, we don't even bother talking about them. The number one guy that I would suggest, since the show is so powerful, Sir Evelyn D. Rothschild, get him on the line. That's the fellow we need to be talking about. They got the most money. They make all the rules. And, they own the Monopoly board.
Well, it's the elitist. It's the Illuminati. It's those who would push for a one-world government. And I'm sure, Jerry, they're all part of it.
Well, yes. I wish the Davos conference or the Bilderberg conference were open. It never will, where they get together and they, plan something that's for the benefit only of the concentrations of capital at the expense of, the ordinary person. When I wrote America for Sale, I pointed out the outsourcing and how it was going to result in what we're experiencing now in terms of the loss of jobs. Unemployment in the United States is not at 8.3%. maybe take a look at the government statistics. I wrote about this in WND, I wrote about it in America for Sale. John Williams, who does shadow statistics, excellent website, suggests it's really at 22.5% right now. We just simply quit counting people after they've been unemployed for a certain period of time. We reduce, we say, well, they're not in the labor force anymore. They haven't looked for work for 4 weeks. Well, that's a joke. People who have abandoned looking for jobs because there is no reasonable prospect of their finding gainful employment are still unemployed and need to be considered a structural problem of long-term unemployment that we've created that is not easily going to be resolved, even though the globalists have pushed for a race for labor to the bottom with opening up this a slave trade across the world, allowing multinational corporations to go get labor at the cheapest price possible.
And they do.
So they do. They will. They're going to, you know, multinational corporations are going to manage for quarterly profits. You give the green light to exploit labor and say, we don't care. Well, we should care as much if labor is exploited in China or Malaysia or anywhere as we do if it's exploited in the United States. And that's something, again, that the American people have got to develop a consciousness of to see the manipulations by the Davos crowd, the One World Order crowd, the elitists, to make policy decisions in their favor and to lie to people about the results. And the lie is, you know, the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers of unemployment are almost a joke anymore. They're politically contrived. And the experts like John Williams, who've studied the government statistics for, you know, decades, have abandoned looking at them and publish a website, shadowstatistics.com. The WND.com quotes constantly showing how the government statistics coming out on economics are a complete fraud, politically manipulated, to present a rosy picture to the American people so Obama can run re-election. And George W. Bush did the same.
Well, Jerry, if this happens, if anything happens, I think it'll be swift. And then, of course, I think all hell breaks loose after that.
Well, and George, you know, the idea of a war coming that's really going to be a solution to anything is, I think, a lie, too. The problem is, it's, you know, they say the sanctions are not well thought out because they corner Iran. Well, also, if Iran's going to build nuclear weapons and they continue to threaten Israel, it's like holding a gun at somebody's head.
Well, and you can't paint somebody into a corner, Jerry. Dr. Jerry Corsi, I invite you to go to our website to get his links on his various websites as well. Thank you, Jerry. Very informative. Very informative. I'll be back in a moment with Dr. Kirby Surprise as we talk about synchronicity.